And Bo spoke up, and Bo said, well, let's try to get one that knows a little bit about a lot of things. So Bob said, let's get Jim W. from Fort Worth, Texas, that he knows about as little as anybody I know of.
Now, really, I met Jim and his lovely wife, Eloise, at the airport yesterday evening, and I immediately fell in love with them. They are just good, down-to-earth people. I've never heard Jim talk, but I've heard a tape, and I know we're in for a real treat. He's a dedicated and loyal member of our wonderful fellowship. He spends unlimited time to its cause and its purpose. And if you will, please help me welcome Jim W.
Bo, you didn't have to bake that pie. Thank you, W.H., and Bo and Barbara. Barbara fixed my badge. I'd broken it, and of course I forgot to bring it. One good thing about us, they'll never be able to make us do anything or make it work. We just won't work. Thank the committee for having me. I've been over at Bobby's place and got some friends that are here from there. And I couldn't imagine them showing up here till I found out they came to hear somebody else, then I understood it. But I like it. They just give you a name and your birthday and they clap for you and stand up for you. If you didn't know they was insane, you could really appreciate it. You know? It's not a big deal, you know. And I said, they give you a name, they introduce you, and people just clap like hell. I said, yeah, they're crazy, you know. They're... A lot of them haven't been out too long. All their best friends are from the hospitals and mental wards. Some of them been out a while, and nobody lets anybody know that they're out because some of them have driver's licenses now and drive cars and live in communities where other people live, but nobody lets anybody know they're there, so it works out okay. I am Jim Williams, now an alcoholic. I'm really not supposed to be an alcoholic. You can tell, I don't even look like an alcoholic. Do I look like an alcoholic? My folks planned for me to be a Southern Baptist. And they're the kind, you know, that pray for the Catholics. They're the real ones, you know. They're the real things. They're just, in fact, we're going to have to get there as soon as we can to pray for y'all to get in so we can get y'all in. Of course, Episcopalians, they just got tired of being Catholics. Catholics drink, you know. And Presbyterians, they knew it was going to happen. I'd like to have been a Lutheran. They just believe in doing everything a little bit. Methodists, they just didn't like water. Dupree will give you the rest of that theology Sunday. But I was raised in this little church, in this little town, this little... We have a bunch of dry counties in Texas where they don't sell it and believe in it or even think about it. And now I'm telling you, they don't. And they talk about the people that do. And they judge them, even though they don't. They call it fruit picking. And so they get by with it, you know. And I was raised that little old bench, and I wasn't supposed to ever even think about doing anything, not doing anything. They just didn't believe in doing nothing. And I got to be about 13, which will happen to you if you do what I was doing one day at a time. And I got around this girl. And I got those funny feelings. And I told them about it. They said, we've been meaning to talk to you. See, I knew they had. You know, we've been praying for you. Yeah, sure they had. You know, it's not like AA. They said, so W.H. lay in the ditch last night. If he lives, we'll get him. And this bunch, they see you coming up, and they see your eyes starting to sparkle. They know you're getting ready to think it. So they got to cut you off at the hedge. Head you off right there. You're going to get in trouble just as soon as you start thinking it. They know you're going to do it. They hone in on you, start praying for you. Sing that last stanza for that poor thing right back there. He points at the one right back there. God, your throat hurts and you choke. Hold in there. Because whatever it is they talk about that you don't want to do it, you feel like you might want to do it. Even though you don't know what it is. But you know there must be some people doing it, they wouldn't be talking about it. And I didn't know whether I wanted to be the one that talked about it or I wanted to be the one who's doing it. Well, finally they told me to meet them before the funeral service. And I met them and they said, you need to get saved. Well, I ain't done nothing. But I guess I need to be saved from something I haven't done. So sure enough, when they sang that last stanza, I came down the aisle. And it's kind of like AA, except don't give out any chips. They hug you and kiss you and tell you how great you are, and you know you're not, but hell, I like it. Then they throw you in the tank of the handkerchief leaks, you choke a little, but you come out okay. Went to school the next day and saw that girl, thump, came right back. Said, well, we're going to have to do it again. Didn't take. They said, no, you just don't do it. Well, they didn't know. I didn't know how to don't do anything. I didn't know how to don't do anything. I didn't know if they could just say, don't do that anymore. They didn't do it anymore. I said, how do you don't do it? Don't think about it. I said, I wonder why I didn't think about that. I thought, well, it's only 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'll just go ahead and think about the rest of the day. Then tomorrow when I get up, I'll never think about it again. Got up the next day and thought about it more, and I thought about it for more. I had no idea that I'm the kind of guy, when I start not to do something, I'm going to do it all the time. And when I start not to think about it, I'm not going to think about anything else. I don't know where I learned how to do that. Hell, I hadn't been anywhere but school and church. I already hear my folks saying things like, Jimmy would never want to do that. Yeah, I did too. They'd say, Jimmy wants to do that. No, I didn't either. I already knew I screwed up. Either I screwed up or they screwed up, because everything they knew I wanted, I didn't want. And everything they knew I wouldn't have anything to do with, that's the only thing I wanted to do. I never did fit in. I never could. They never did care about me enough. I never could. God, I used to go with people. Didn't want to go. Hell, I'd just go because I thought if I'd go, they'd like me better. Never liked me enough. 30 miles away was a town that was wild and wicked. And it was wet. That means they sell whatever that is that nobody thinks you ought to drink. We had one bad guy that drank wine and bay rum and slept downtown. I always tried to get out of town before I went to sleep. And I never drank bay rum, because he was bad. My grandmother used to say, what about him? Just sorry. And I mean, that's sorry. That's not just sorry, sorry. That's sorry, sorry, sorry. And I knew I never wanted to be sorry. We slipped over there this Saturday. That's before you could do it during the week. And then we went over. You had babies and everything, you know, on Saturday, and washed and everything. And then we went over there and out the door of that honky-tonk, and there was that deacon with a warm girl in one hand and a cold beer in the other. I said, my God, let's get out of here. He'll tell Jesus on us. And we didn't even get to do it. However, he was happier than I'd ever seen him. And I liked the girl he was with Saturday night a lot better than with him running around on Sunday morning. And I always thought, I saw him on Sunday mornings only, and I thought deacons were just sad men. Hell, now I know, he's just tired. We had two beers, didn't taste good, didn't feel good. I was glad to get out of there. God, I was glad to get out of there, because I just knew he's going to tell somebody that I was glad. It didn't taste good, feel good, didn't do nothing to me. I was glad to get out of there. Next morning, I waked up, and I thought, I want to go to church first time in life. I said, maybe you get old enough, you don't have to go. Maybe I just think he's been there, and he hadn't really been there. There he was, sad like he always was. Then I had my first spiritual awakening. Maybe you can do it a little bit and just don't tell anybody. So I told my buddy, I said, next Saturday we're going to go back. His big town had two joints. We'll go to the other joint. Went in there, didn't see a deacon I knew. Learned how to do everything but commit adultery. Didn't know a lot about it. And you know how we are. Get tied up, talk about it, think about it all day long. And then get tied up, get too busy, miss it. Then if we do, we don't know whether we did or not. And you can't call back and say, we do anything last night? Hell, you might have, but everything is fine. I learned how to drink, didn't even know I knew how. I started drinking one beer, but after that, I got feeling good, couldn't feel it all. Learned how to dance. Southern Baptist is not allowed to dance, you know. You can't hold girls that close. And then we started dancing and fell down and broke my nose. I did it five times after I learned how to do it. Blacked out just like I was supposed to. Waked up this next morning, threw up just like I knew what I was doing. This guy Paul said, how do you feel? I said, God, I feel horrible. He said, oh, but you had a great time. I said, oh, well. Then I knew how to have a good time. Go out, get drunk, black out, wake up next morning, throw up, then you know you had a good time. Did not know you drank it any other way. I thought people who put food in it, people put milk, put bourbon in milk, ruin the bourbon. Putting it in milk and putting food in it and stuff, I thought, hell, they just don't drink. I thought people who drank, drank. I thought when you went to have a beer, you go as long as you can go. I just believed in going, you can't go. I never went anywhere I wasn't going to go. The guy used to tell me, you going the distance? I said, I didn't know enough for you to go. I never had a short trip in my life. Just far as it just runs until she runs out. Wherever it is, just drop where it is. Because you never know when they're going to drop, where you're going to go out. I never did know when I was going out. Sometimes I'd go out and kept going, but I just did it. And finally, I was kind of living alone, lonesome. I was lonesome. Hell, I was almost 18 years old, been 18 years old about 2 days. And I was lonesome. You know, my life's half over. And I was over at this town by myself, and I walked by this post office. I was getting ready to go out with a beer. And I looked out there, and there was a sign out there that said, we need you. And I walked in there, and they was waiting for me. They had the thing laid out on the desk just for me to fill out. And the guy was sitting there waiting. Wasn't anybody else there. They were just waiting for me to come. And so I signed up with them. And they said, have you ever been to California? I said, no. Like to go? Love to go. We'll go to California. Come back here in the morning. I went home, told my folks, shocked them a little. Come back. They wasn't too shocked, evidently. They let me go. And I came back, and we went to San Antonio. I should have known then this is a funny bunch. One day they're going to California, the next day they're going to San Antonio. They may not know what they're doing. And they get up in the middle of the night. And I've never been too crazy about getting up anyway. And they get up in the dark, make their bed real quick, because I guess somebody's coming, but they never did. Then they go eat. Nobody wants to eat that time of day. It's just barely day. It's not no light yet. And you'd throw up if you hadn't been drinking. Then they were all scared because they walked in groups. Whoever was our wheels decided they wanted to take a surprise trip. So they took a place. They took us to a place and they wouldn't tell us where we were going. They said it was a secret. Didn't want anybody to know. Our bunch had decided we should go to China. And of course, I thought about going to California, but I never thought about going to China. We were in the Air Force, so we went to China by boat. I think they flew the Navy over and the Marines ran the boat. A lot of Chinese over there. They don't really have a hell of a lot over there but Chinese. They know how to do it, and they just do it. They don't get into a lot of other stuff. They got a few trees and a couple of hills and a little rice, but they really just mostly have Chinese. They specialize in it, and they know how to do it, and they don't know how to stop it. They just keep going. Well, after you're over there about 3 weeks, you've seen all the Chinese you want to see. And I told them I was ready to come home, and thank God we stayed 2 years. And we came back by boat. I think the Air Force just left the planes over there. They were going to have a revolution. They're probably going to need them. Well, then I had a very disappointing thing occur to me. My folks said, what are you going to do now? I said, I'm going to work. What are you going to do? You don't know anything to do. You've got to go to school because everybody's going to school. Everybody, you're going to have that piece of paper. If you don't have that piece of paper, you won't even be able to... You can't even apply for a job, let alone get one. Everybody coming out of the service going to school, everybody's going to have that piece of paper. I hate school. I had to go to summer school to get out of school. Went to school. But I proved my folks wrong. I gutted that thing through there in 3.5 years. I got that piece of paper and I didn't learn one single thing. Any subject I took would not benefit a human being in any form, fashion, or way. You know what I like about you and I? We'll go to any length, even if it destroys us, just to be right. There's a lot of folks who won't do that. A lot of folks will just say, you know, I could be wrong about that. Not you and I. Only time you and I'll ever use that statement is when we know damn sure we're right. Then we might say, you know, I could be wrong about that. Well, I was really disappointed when I got out of school. I didn't mind working part-time. They wanted me to work full-time and on Mondays. Every place I went to work, they always... Man, you could not miss Mondays. God, Thursdays, but not Mondays. And I was sicker on Mondays than I was on Thursday because I'm getting ready to get sick again on Thursday. I was having some minor difficulties with women. If you put 10 pretty girls up there, I'll get the sick one every time. I don't know how I learned how to do that. I'd see other guys that they just go with any girl. You can't do that. You got to make sure she's pretty and sweet and one that you can be in love with, one that you can take home. You can't just go with any girl, for God's sake. Take me about 2 months to find that poor, precious, beautiful, sick little thing. Then take us about 2 months for us to be so totally in love, I'd almost have to quit work. Then they just deteriorate from there on out. The only thing that's awkward living that life is going around when you're out of one and hadn't found her yet, and there you are in love with no girl. Finally lost my job and couldn't get one. And the way I'd look for jobs, I'd get up every morning, throw up and spray. I'd go fill out one of those stupid forms that asked you personal questions like, where have you worked the last 10 years? None of their business. They even want to know where you lived the last 10 years. And then they ask you questions that you don't know them too well, and you know what you and I have to do. We have to say, I wonder what they'd like for me to say. And then you don't know them very well. It's hard to fill them out. That's hard work, filling that stuff out. Then your interview's only about 10 minutes, and then you're gone. Go out and get drunk and do it again the next day. I finally did that for about 10 days. I said, you know, I just got up that morning, threw up and sprayed, and I said, hell, I've been doing this for 10 days. I think I'll take the day off. Went out the golf course, and ain't no leg, no piece of toast, just so I might drink some later on the day. Walked around to my last friend where he lived. He had the beer joint right next to the golf course where we used to drink beer all the time. And I went in, and he said, God, you look horrible this morning. I said, yeah, I think I'm coming down with something. He said, man, the way you're vibrating, I think you need a beer and you need one right now. And I said, oh, you know, I'm Baptist. We never drink before noon. That's 10:30. He said, my God, man, what difference does it make what time it is? Drink this beer. I drank half that beer and sprayed the golf course with it. I don't mind spraying if I don't lose my concentration. Get thinking about girls or something and it gets in my nose and burns. Then you got to drink the rest of the day just to kill the pain. And I already knew how to meditate before I got here. I don't meditate that deeply anymore. But it's just when me, God, and the commode, and I say, oh, God, and it's stringy. You don't know where the end is, and you can't get it back. So you don't know whether you're going to run out of breath before it ends or what. You know, they ought to use that commode thing for the energy crisis. Even in the hot summertime, you know, when you meditate that deeply, it's tiring. And you lean over there, and that was always, even the hot summertime, just as cool. I told this guy, I said, I think I better go home and lie down. I didn't get to use those vibrators in motels until 2 years after I was sober because I could just vibrate all by myself. And I left to have a meeting with me. I left to live with me. You know, I could really live different. I'd call on hospitals. I'd get in the car and I'd say, God, I hate to go with that big old hospital this morning. Have a hard time finding a parking place, and when you do, you got to carry that kit down through the lobby, down the basement, wind around there. You know that damn person, can't you? He's not going to buy anything anyway. See, you don't even have to park. Just drive right on by. Wait till 10:30, go to the beer joint, say, what's the matter? Have a bad day? Yeah, didn't buy anything again today. So I went home, and I got in the living room, and I decided I'd have a meeting, and I said, you know what I think I'll do? I'll commit suicide. And those guys where I've been applying for a job that didn't hire me will read, and they're living in Houston, in the Houston Chronicle, Jimmy Williams commits suicide. And they'll worry about it for the rest of their days. They'll never get over it. But I didn't know how to do it. Now there's nothing to it. I say it on TV all the time now. You don't even have to know nothing anymore. Suicide, call that number. They probably even have pamphlets on it now, the different ways, and softer, easier, long drawn out. This was even before overdose was popular. You know, overdose, they don't recommend that where the school I come from. We all think you have to be sound in mind and body to commit suicide. I remember all three of my suicides, and overdose, you'll just remember the pump. So I decided I didn't like guns. Because they make noise in the morning. I don't like noise in the morning. And they splatter all over everything. I don't like messes. Razor blades were popular then. But I didn't know how to do it. You just read in the paper, it said, cut his wrist with a razor blade. Didn't say what kind of blade, double edged. Wouldn't say what kind. Didn't say where they cut it, how deep, which one. I knew you couldn't do it in the living room. You get blood all over the carpet. Now I'm always thinking of others. So I went in the bathroom and got my razor blade and sat down on the phone. Now, even though I'd never done it before, I had sense enough to know if you just cut the left wrist, left side would die, right side would be alive. Though you would be sitting there half dead and half alive. back out. So I didn't want to do that. So I cut both wrists so I could die evenly. And I was just sitting there listening to the drip. And the phone rang. Now I thought, what if where I'm going, I'll always wonder who that was called. That'd be enough to run you crazy. So I put a band-aid on my wrist right quick. Answered the phone. It was the police. This guy said, where were you last night? I said, I was right here. He said, no, you weren't. I said, how do you know? And he said, we was there. Then I didn't want to talk to him anymore. I'd already learned whoever talked to anybody know more about where you've been than you do. I said, well, what do you want me to do? He said, well, you either come down here, we'll come out there and get you. I said, I'll be right there. And he said, if that were you, I'd pick up an attorney on the way. And I said, that'll take me an extra 30 minutes, but wait for me, I'm coming. God, I love to live with me. I can live a week in a half a day. I've had a hell of a day. Been out the golf course, thrown up. Had two emergency meetings, committed suicide. Now I've got to deal with the police, and it's only 11 o'clock. So I had to call another meeting, so we all got together and decided we had $36, which before inflation was plenty to start a new career. Houston had been bad to me anyway. And the policeman did not tell me what he wanted me for, which was, so he should have told me. I think I'll just leave town. So I had a quilt and a few little sheets and pillow and had one piece of furniture, an old lamp. It just had room in the car for me and had the rest of the dirty clothes and whatever they were. Put that old lamp up there. I'm sure I was going to carry the light if I could ever find the plug. Stopped by and got me a pint of whiskey on the way out, mailed the key to the folks that owned the place, and I waked up the next morning about 200 miles away and had $7. I said, I wonder how my folks are getting along. So I called them collect so they'd know it was me. And they said, what are you doing? I said, oh, I'm just out riding around. They said, why don't you come by and have a cup of coffee? I said, I believe we will. So I drove by Fort Worth and had a cup of coffee, and I never shortchange my folks. I always give them my very, very finest story. They're not going to get their money back. So I gave them my... In fact, I got to listening to that story. It was so horrible. Hell, I cried with them. I thought, my God, if I'd have known it was that bad, I'd have left Houston 3 years earlier. And old John said, well, Jimmy's honest. Let him have 100. God, with 107, you can almost go into business. So I got up the next morning, turned around to my aunt, and I said, you know, there's only one thing I left out. Going through all that difficulty in Houston, I was drinking some. And I decided last night that you're never going to have to worry about me ever again. I'm never going to get underfinanced again. And I'm never going to drink another drop as long as I live. You won't have to worry about me ever again. And my folks looked at me just like a blank wall. After I got an A, I said, do you remember that time? She said, which one? I said, she said, well, I think maybe I remember. I turned around to John and said, what do you think? He said, he's 33. He'll never live till he's 35. So every time we thought you was leaving, as fast as you were living, we'd never see you again alive. Well, I thought, God, I've got $107. I think I'll go to the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. I've never been. And I knew a guy that went down there 5 or 6 years ago, and I'm sure he's dying to see me. Don't call. They'll tell you not to come. Just right down there, 10.5 hours is all from Fort Worth. That's the end, you know. The country ends there. They quit. They got a little creek, and they changed to different country. Start speaking Spanish just right there. Well, Tex-Mex, and then Spanish. So then I got down there, and I moved into one of the beautiful places, the old downtown hotel where you parked across the street. And every morning, I never took anything out of my car. Every morning, I'd get up and walk down to the lobby, get a pair of shorts, socks, shirt, come back up, take a shower, go out to the station where this guy worked, and I went out there for 3 weeks, 7 days a week, and they hired me finally. And they hired me because people don't come through down there. They go down there fishing or playing golf or ducking the winter weather, but they don't come down there looking for jobs. So they hired me, and for some reason, I could just get drunk and not drunk for about a few months till I could get up into my place. Sometimes they had to let a man go because he was in my place. They just didn't realize they had the wrong man there. But once we explained it to them, where they can finally understand it, they let the guy go like they should have when I first got there. And I got into my place, and I settled down to do my thing. One afternoon, I'd been there about 7 or 8 months, and I was just too tired to rush out from work and get drunk. So I had to go down and rest 30 minutes. That's all you need. And the manager came by and knocked on the door. Said, you know, you've been here over 7 months. Don't you think it's time we got acquainted? I said, yeah. Would you like to go have a beer? I said, oh, I guess one. He was a drunk, just like me. I lasted there for 8 years. So he screwed up and got fired. I'm still trying to get married. And it's hard for a drunk to court a lot. And I realized that when you're just being true to one girl, and then it goes to pot. There you are, that space, looking for one and can't find one. So what you need is a main one and a spare. So I set that up. I got me a main one and a spare. It's hard to court it off. because I'd call the main one, and I'd say, about 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'd say, pick you up by 7:30. Okay, about be 4 or 5 days before you get by there. Now, my weekends, I work 5 and a half days a week, got off at Saturday at noon, and I'd rush to the golf course, eat a heavy lunch like a cheese cracker and a six-pack, play golf and be blacked out and drunk and in bed by 6:30. Then up at 10:30, 11, go down and start drinking again. And 1 o'clock come, we just get in the car, go right on over to Madame Morris, and stay till daylight, come back and have breakfast and throw it up, then drink beer, and for taper off into Monday. Sometimes you made it, and sometimes you missed it. And that's what I did on the weekends. And if I didn't play golf, I went fishing, same deal. Everything was the same. Well, this Friday night, I'm changing off with this guy on the weekends where I'm not working Saturday or Sunday, so I'm up at 11 o'clock on Friday, and I'm not supposed to be up. That's 2 hours past my bedtime. I'm blacked out and in bed by 9 o'clock. Supposed to be. I start early, get in bed early. So here I am up and just about blacked out, and I'm over at number one's house, and I say, you know how honest we are. Sometimes we're just too honest for folks. I just merely mentioned that I thought I might drop by and see the other girl. She had not heard about it, and I'm sorry I never neglected to tell her. And I just thought, but I want to go to your bathroom first, and she followed me in there. That's the wrong place to have a meeting. All the surfaces in there are very firm, even the paint on the commode's hard. And I don't remember the discussion, except the next morning I've already learned to wake up in total fright in my own bed. And I'm living in a beautiful place, an old, faded, worn-out green trailer in an alley behind a motel. I had a rock yard a long time before I started putting them in. I remember seeing those old weeds come up there. I said, you'll never make it. And I'm laying there asleep like I'm supposed to be, and something goes, wham! God! I shot out of there and looked down there, still had my clothes on. I said, by God, I guess I was going somewhere early this morning. Then I looked down there and had some blood on that old white shirt. Blood makes me sick, you know. And God, here I am in total fright, and I open that door, and there's that 6'4", 250-pound Baptist preacher saying, come go along with me. I said, preacher, I cannot make it. I cannot make it. I know I look like I'm ready, but wherever the meeting is, I cannot make it. I'm just not ready. I know I look like it, but I am not ready. He said, get in the car. God, I can't do it. I can't do it. I cannot handle total fright with no light. And I said, got in the car. I said, preacher, he drove off. I looked, and then I said, God, I felt my head had knots on it. I looked on, had a little blood. I said, God, my head was doing like that. And God, I couldn't understand. I said, looked at my car, and it didn't look like it had a wreck. Parked funny, but it didn't look like it had a wreck. And I said, preacher, I'm going to have beer. I'm not going to make it. He said, there'd be no drinking before the meeting. God, I knew I had a meeting, We drove up in front of her house, so I assumed he was going to be there. And we opened that door, head throbbing, skin still blood, and nobody's saying anything. I'm not going to ask him if I'm bleeding to death. And when I saw her, she did look like she might have fallen in a bush or something. And I sat there for a little while, whatever the discussion was, it was about me. And we went into the bathroom. I said, I've got to go to the bathroom. And I went in there and looked in that mirror, and I'm going to tell you something. She won. I'll probably never know exactly what happened. What I think really happened was I probably lost my equilibrium, fell in that bathtub, and she stepped on me. 2 weeks later, we got married. We got married in the First Baptist Church, so it worked. We got married at 10 o'clock in the morning, so there'd be no drinking before the funeral or ceremony. Well, I had told her since she had been married before, and I was pure, that there wasn't any point in our inviting anybody to the wedding. Well, I'm up again, 11 o'clock, blacking out, and I call people till 3. My beer distributor friend met me at the door of the church and said, I'm going to tell you something. You called me at 3:15 this morning. We're not here to see you get married. We're here because we don't believe it. The longest bet on your marriage is 3 weeks. But I showed them. I hung it in there for 8 years, but my life changed. I had no idea how nice it was to get up and throw up in peace. I was always going to quit smoking because it made me gag in the morning, so I'd grab those cigarettes and grab that coffee and go in that bathroom and lock that door. She's telling me what I am through that door. I have to get upset, go make the living, get drunk, come home, and tell her what she was. And we did that one day at a time. I finally went back to that preacher. I was saying, well, I'm going to really try some things. One night I was out drinking. And it was about 9 o'clock, and I said, you know, I really ought to start going home earlier. I never went home except blacked out, and I wasn't near blacked out. It was that little 15 minutes every night when I'm really pleasant. Everybody really likes me. Don't stay too long, and I'm a sourpuss up till then. So I thought, I'll just go home and be nice and go home early. I come in just good and tight and feeling good and just hot, and she happened to mention that we still hadn't gotten the air conditioner fixed. It had only been 3 weeks. I was working on it, though. I never got anybody to get it fixed. Just didn't have any money. I stripped down to my shorts, and I'm laying on that bed. Just everything's fine. Nothing's wrong. And I'm just laying there, and she just walked up to me and put that pistol right there. I said, Lord, 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 if you'll just get me out of here, I'll never have my butt in this bed ever again. I promise you, Lord, if you'll let me out of here, you'd be surprised how unfunny that is. And everything at the time was very, very funny. I was having a big time, and I had no idea she wasn't with me. She didn't do it. And where do you think I was the next night? Right back where I still was, same place. Blacked out, but I went on blacked out, and then on hell, I never took a chance going home sober. I went back to that preacher, and I said, Preacher, this thing is not working. He said, you know what's wrong with you? You're missing the beauty of life. I said, yeah. He said, did you know the fruit trees are in bloom? I said, no. He said, what you need to do is go get in the car, get your wife, and go up the valley, smell the aroma, and look at the blossoms. I said, yeah. I got in the car, went over, opened the door, and said, get in the car! He said, what for? I said, we're going to go look at the blossoms. She said, the blossoms? I said, yeah, we're missing the whole damn thing. So we get in the car, and I go over to the hop shop and get a six-pack of beer and drive up the valley. Said 14 miles to Matamoros, turned left, went to Matamoros, switched the tequila, blacked out, missed the whole damn thing. Lost that job. Couldn't get a job, went absolutely insane, looking for jobs everywhere. I always like to change careers. I never had one, but I like to change careers every time I lose a job. And finally, about 2 months after that, going completely nuts and insane, this guy called me and said, I've been drunk with him, and he's a drunk just like I was. He said, but he managed a drug company. He said, you don't understand, you're kind of looking around for a job. I said, oh, kind of. He said, well, what do you think about going to work with me? I said, I don't know, we can discuss it if you want to. He said, well, no use in us going to the office and doing it formal. Why don't you just meet me over at the cafe about 10:30? I said, good time. We hadn't had breakfast, and he said, I'll just meet you there. I said, fine. You had breakfast? No. Well, we don't have breakfast. We had a beer. We went down to Padre Island to look over the territory, and we rode on the boat about 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, and had a boat wreck, ran in some piling, and we picked up a couple of girls so they could give them a ride so they could get mixed up in all this. Had a good time. And they taught us down to the hospital, and some idiot called their wives, and here comes mine, checked the women out first, and then they put us all in separate hospitals, and 3 weeks later, well, I got out of the hospital, and I got the job. We all apply for jobs like anybody. See, if you don't fill out all that crap, you can get the job. Took him about 6 weeks to realize two drunks in that company in the Rio Grande Valley was one too many. So he shipped me to Fort Stockton, Texas. That's west Texas. In fact, they got little trees out there about that high. You can see California on a clear day. There's 536 people live there, and 36 of them are making a living. I joined the 500. I'm supposed to stand in a drugstore and hold a pad right here and write. Hell, I couldn't even spell oreomycin, let alone write it. And you just can't do it. You stand there in front of that pharmacy, send it, and you can't get it on the line. You can't get the pen on the paper, let alone do that. This pharmacist says, "My God, man, you look like you're going to fly apart." I said, "Any minute." He said, "Well, take some of these." This was before Valium. This was just Libium, which is just a little two-tone green and black, two-tone green stuff, which is nothing. Valium, you know, understand, both eyes cross and you walk straight. So I took two of them, and I'm used to something burning or something. Nothing happened. I waited 15, 20 seconds. So I took three more. Then my knee just went, whoo! I said, "God, I know how to weave. Now I've got to learn new stamps." I always tickle me when the pharmacist would say, "Jim, I'm a little short of tens. 25 milligram be okay?" "Be fine." They're the same size, you know. We don't go a milligram, we just go a size. Three or four of those, or three or four of those, it's the same three or four at a time. So I took Librium daytime, drank beer at night. I only had one decision to make every night. After the third beer, never before, I'd say, "Well, am I going home early?" "If I am, I'll switch to bourbon, drink a pint of bourbon on top of that, and a little Librium, and you go home like you're supposed to. Or stay on beer till midnight and close the joint, and you still go home blacked out." And that's the way I went. Ended up getting a job from some people out of Huntington, Indiana. Somebody recommended me, hadn't seen me in 12, 15 years. I got the job. No reason for me to get the job. The president of the company said when I was up there, "We don't know why you're here." I didn't either. My God. I couldn't help him any. Got the job, and they shipped me back to Houston. And my wife and I had developed such a sweet, deep hate for one another that we were probably both finally safe because the one that died first won. In bed because it was too dangerous. So we got us a two-holer and moved in there. And I lasted about 9 months, from March 1st of 1965 to Christmas, day before Christmas Eve of 1965. And I did the same thing there, except no customers ever send me drunk. And we played golf with some of the customers and their in-laws and outlaws, and I was a little too hospitable. And I went over to their house blacked out, drove from one side of Houston, from one side to the other blacked out, which is nothing new for me. I'm a blackout driver. Sometimes I didn't make it, sometimes I did. What didn't make it wasn't my fault, it was the other folks' fault. Sometimes the cars were just parked and didn't make it, but wasn't my fault, should have parked the car there. So I waked up the next morning, total fright, just like I'm supposed to. Looked out there and went around my car, no new dents, don't know how my car got back. I've even quit asking it how it got back, because it never would tell me. And then I came back in, I'm not an alcoholic. And I've never been exposed to AA. And I guess I heard it on the radio. Oh, what's her name? And gone next door is getting ready to have a party. And I picked up the phone, looked in the phone book underneath the Alcoholics Anonymous and called in a group. I guess I'd heard that name and that number. And when I called them, this girl said, "Act like she's glad I called. I should have known it had the wrong number." She said, "Somebody be right out." Well, I waited an hour. Nobody showed. It was 10:15. I looked in the icebox, had three beers. I said, "Well, I just called and tell him I don't need them." About that time, the phone rang. The guy said, "I'll be right there." Hell, before I could tell him I didn't need him, he hung up. Could have saved him a trip. You know how they are. They don't have any patience in this outfit. I said, well, I'll just get rid of him when he gets here. And sure enough, I looked out there, and he came by himself because he and his wife was managing these apartments when we moved in. And he used to watch me going back and forth to 7-Eleven saying, he lives, we'll get him. And he had a book under his arm, a little short guy with a pointed nose. I said, oh, my God. We're going to read that book and pray. I've not only been rededicated 10 times, I've been baptized and rededicated 10 times. I said, I'm just getting rid of him. We didn't read the book. We didn't pray. I don't remember one single thing he said. About that time, old what's-her-name came back in there and said, you want to go with me? Well, I didn't, but it's better than staying with her. So I got in the car with him, and we hit that old 610 loop down there in Houston. I said, God, I've made a mistake. Here I am going off with a perfect stranger. I should have taken my car. And this guy is not my kind of guy. So I waited about 30 more seconds, and I gave him the test. I said, I'll buy a beer.
I don't want a beer.
God, I knew it. I knew it. I went into total fright in about 20 more seconds. I can't handle a fight with no light. And I said, I'm going to tell you one thing. I got bad drunk last night. And you either let me off on top of this freeway and I'll walk over there, you told him, or do you take me over there? Because I've got to have beer. I've got to have it right now. He said, can you wait till we get to the club? Oh, yeah, I can do that. To the club? Oh, yeah, I can do that. And we drove, and we were kind of a bad neighborhood. And drove up front of this old rickety-looking house, and I said, this it? He said, yeah. I thought, well, when I get some money, I'll help these folks. Opened that door, and there's a bunch of the deacons sitting over there talking about women in the stock market, and I found out later on they didn't know anything about either one. Had an old bar back there in the back, had an old piece of linoleum on it. Hell, I bet it had holes in it to put it on it. And the bar didn't look a hell of a lot better than I did. This is a program of attraction, you know. And this little short guy said, mix him up a little milk and honey. I said, my God, what do you put in it? I never drank anything like that in my life. He said, you see, you're nervous. I said, hell, that's what I've been trying to tell you. And he said, besides all that, you're used to sugar in your system from alcohol, and the honey has already been digested. I said, indigestion's not my problem. If you throw up right, you don't have indigestion. I drank it, and it curdled, boom, came right back up. He said, don't worry about it. We have plenty. I thought, hell, I'm just going to put on a show for these guys. One of the smart ones said, walk all you want to. Hell, I didn't want to walk at all. They just sat there and said, well, I haven't got any animal in here today, and watch you walking back and forth and back and forth. And I was drinking that sweet, 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 666 sweet. Hell, I hadn't had a piece of chocolate pie in 15 years. And finally, about 4 o'clock, this guy said, well, I guess we better go home. I said, yeah. I said, let me out a couple of blocks before I get to the apartment. I knew I'd just slip in there and sneak and get my car, go get some bourbon, because beer would not cut that sweet taste. He said, don't drink anything. I'm going to pick you up in an hour. I said, what for? We're going to a meeting. I said, where? Right back where we came from. I said, my God, we was there all day. I said, well, just let me out the apartment. I got out there and walked. Here he comes, and back over there we go. Kind of a funny bunch. I saw a few of them kind of laughing and hugging and kissing. The rest of them, they didn't act like this any happier to be there than I was. They said a little funny prayer. And then some gal got up and talked for 2 or 3 hours. They said just 30 minutes, but I know damn well it was longer than that. And they just laughed and wasn't a damn thing funny. I said, these people are crazy. You're in rain. And the guy got up and talked 3 or 4 hours. And they got up, all held hands and prayed, said the Lord's Prayer. And the Holy Spirit moved in there. Every one of them started talking at the same time, and nobody listened. I said, I wonder how in the hell he did that. They didn't sing any songs, come down the altar, lay any hands. They didn't do nothing. They just said that prayer. I said, I'm going to keep my eyes open tomorrow night and see what he did. K kept going night after night after night. Then I saw the deal. About 30 minutes later, we're standing back there in the back, and nobody's speaking to us. Then I saw men and women getting together, running out there and getting together and getting in those cars and taking off. I said, then I know the deal. As soon as you're here a little while, we'll have a little drink and talk about this damn thing. We went night after night after night. Nobody did invited us anywhere. I thought, I've got the only deacon, only one that can't stand. Oh, I saw boys and girls taking off and nobody invited us. He said, good night, Dick. Good night, Jim. One night it's just flooding. Just raining. It doesn't rain in Houston. It just drops out. And I said, the phone rang. And he said, I'll pick you up in 30 minutes. I said, it's raining. He said, did you ever go get a drink when it's raining? I said, I'll be ready. One night, old what's-her-name was out of town. So I just locked the door, pulled out all the shades, turned out all the lights, had nothing on but the TV set. That old phone just ring, 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 I let it ring. Next morning he called, said, where were you last night? I was at home watching television, enjoyed every damn minute of it, I may do it again tonight. He said, well, you missed it. I said, what did I miss? He said, I don't know. I said, wasn't you there? He said, yeah, but I only heard what I was supposed to hear. We'll never know what it was you were supposed to hear. Said, my God, you gotta go every night, you'll miss it. I went 3 months, got drunk, went 3 months, got drunk, went 3 months, got drunk, and I sobered up all by myself. I heard all you had to do is just be sober 72 hours and the whiskey's out of your system. I said, good. I waited 60, which is enough. And then I had a meeting, and I decided that the only thing, I'm not really an alcoholic. The only thing that's wrong with me is I've just always been underfinanced. And if I can get properly financed, I'll be okay. I can leave everybody. So I thought, well, now they say first things first, so the first thing I need to do is go back there and officially resign. So I was going to go back, and the meeting had already started, so I had to sit through that meeting. And then here's old impatience coming. Evidently, he said, I called him about 3:15 one morning, and I don't believe I did, of course. While I was drinking, I don't think I did, but they tell you anything here. And before I could tell him, I was quitting, and I was resigning, and I appreciated everything. He said, don't you ever call me again as long as you live. I said, God, I'm glad you said that. I never called you in the first place. They called you. And I'm going to tell you something your best friends won't tell you. Nobody likes you here. We don't get invited anywhere. And they don't know me, so it's got to be you. And I'm going to tell you something that I know about you is that if I had as bad a personality as you do, I'd go back to drinking. And you don't have to worry about me calling you. I'll never call you again as long as I live, and I don't give a damn what happens. And then I went home, and I didn't until the next morning. He said, meet me at the club. And I met him at the club, and he said, get your coffee and sit down and talk to you like a dog here, you know. So now I'm going to tell you something about Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, Al-Teen, Al-Tot, and Al-Dog. There's absolutely no failure here. Does not, will not, must not, cannot, impossible to fail. Provided you do exactly what we tell you to do, the way we tell you to do it. Then there's only one thing that you're going to get to do for the rest of your days, beginning today. You're going to get to do one thing, and this is the only thing you're going to get to do. But you're the only one that gets to do it. You're going to get to make a decision of whether you're going to go our way of life or your way of life. If you don't give an alcoholic a decision to make, they'll flounder on the same subject for years. He said, so we're going to give you a decision. Are you going to go our way of life or your way of life? Either go our way of life or get up and go right back out that door. I said, I don't want to do either one. He said, I didn't ask you what you wanted to do. I asked you what you were going to do. I said, do you mean to tell me that you don't care whether I want to or not? He said, not a bit. The group doesn't care? Not at all. I said, well, if you'll make it perfectly clear to the group that I don't want to do it, then I'll do it. He said, well, first of all, they got to get some things straight. I don't know what time it is. I don't even know what time we started. It's not raining, is it? It's your thinking that's wrong. I said, how much of my thinking is wrong? We always start with all of it. And if there's any good, we'll let you know. I said, you put a sign up there on the wall that says, think, think, think. He said, that's for us. So now we're going to give you some things not to do and some things to do. Now the things we're going to give you not to do is going to change. The things we're going to give you to do, you'll just add to. Then it's going to happen over here. I said, what's going to happen over there? We don't know, but it always happens. I said, you know, I've been listening to you for over 9 months, and I listened this morning to every single word that you said, and I'm going to tell you right up front, baby, you don't listen to me, you listen to me now, I do not understand. He said, and that's it, and don't you ever forget. That there's two things that you're going to remember for the rest of your days. No matter what's going on in your life, you do not understand. Then you'll have understanding. And when you quit trying to understand, then you'll enjoy it. And the other thing is, no matter what your situation is, it's never the situation, it's never them, it's never her, it's never God, it's you that must become different. You must become different than you have ever been before. I said, how do I do that? He said, oh, you can't. I said, what the hell you tell me for? He said, that's what's going to happen to you. He said, now, I'm going to give you the kicker. This is the very one thing that got you here. But it's also the very one thing that if it does not change, will be the one thing that'll get you, keep you from getting all the things that God has for His children. As long as you know that you know, you'll never know. When you begin to do what we tell you not to do and to do, and begin to know you don't know, then you'll begin to know. I said, hell, you're crazy! He said, I know. He said, now since you don't know how to not do anything, this is where we're going to not beginning. You're going to learn, first of all, how to not drink, take a pill. That card that I gave you has my number, four other men, no women on mine. When you get squirrely, definitely before you take a drink or a pill, you call one of those numbers no matter what time of day or night it is. Now, if you don't make the call when you get squirrely, even if you didn't drink, you didn't do it. Make the phone call. When you get squirrely, make the phone call. Now, that's the way we're going to learn how to not do something. This is what we're going to do every day. When you get on your knees in the morning, get down on your knees the first thing when you get out of that bed, and say these words and these words only. God, take me today. Let me be what you want me to be. Let thy will only be done in my life. Help me to death not take a drink of anything alcoholic or a mind-changing drug. Amen. Do not need to tell God what he has not done, nor what he needs to do. God's highly capable of handling all that by himself. And then call me before you go to the bathroom. I said, why before I go to the bathroom? You may not need to go. I said, do you mean tell me that you don't think I've got sense enough to know when I need to go to the bathroom? He said, we'll find out. They don't give you a lot of credit here, you know. Before I got out on my knees, I said, God, you and I know he don't know. Hell, he's a Presbyterian. But we're going to do it just exactly like he says, so when we get through, we can tell him to take this deal and shove it. I got down on my knees, said that prayer, made sure I need to go to the bathroom, picked up that phone, called him, and he said, go to the bathroom, meet me at the club. He didn't ask where I need to go or not. I managed the club. He said, now go to work. I said, I hate my job. He said, what's that got to do with it? I said, well, I hated it as much yesterday I couldn't go to work. He said, what'd you do, sit in that chair and think? I said, yeah, till noon. Then I went to the club. He said, you know how to go to work. I said, how's that? He said, go get in the car. If you'll write this down, you can catch it. And he said, and besides all that, besides that prayer you say every morning, when you get in the car, you invite God in today. I said, how do you do that? He said, you say, God, I invite you in today. I said, oh, put that on that card. If you don't lose the card, you got it. Then I met him back at the club, and you know how they are. Sit down with us. Don't say anything. Get your coffee. Don't say a word. Listen to the great ones. Then out loud so everybody can hear. Now, you can go home and eat supper and come back. Hell, I know to go home and eat dinner. God. Then I come back. Go to the meeting. Now go home and thank God for the day. I do not thank God for the day. It's been a miserable damn day. I hate you, and I hate them, and I hate God, and I hate her, and I hate my job. I'm not going to be a hypocrite. He said, do you feel like when you're talking to God that you don't mean it? And I said, that's right, and I'm not going to do it. He said, that has absolutely nothing to do with it. It's the action you're taking that you don't know you're taking that's going to make all the difference. And you'll never be able to take certain action for certain things to happen, because when you take the action which is against your thinking that you don't know you're taking, what's going to happen, you'll never know what it is till after it happens, and what you want to happen may never need to happen. Well, I certainly understood that. I said, do you mean to tell me that God does not care whether I mean it or not? You don't care, the group doesn't care? And he said, no, we don't care. It's just the action you're taking. I just got in the car, went over, shut the door, called, what's the name, couldn't get in there, got down on that thing, said, okay, by God, God, thank you for a miserable damn day. Amen. Hell, if he don't care and they don't care, God don't care, hell, I don't care. Did that for about 2 months. And I got up the next morning, didn't do anything any different that day I did any other day. Hit that old 610 loop about 9:15 that morning, and this guy that I had never known moved into that car with me. And for the first time in my life, I knew a God as my friend. And I knew something different than I had ever known it before. I knew I would never need to take another drink of anything alcoholic or mind-changing drug unless I myself insisted upon it. And I knew it. God stayed with me all that day, and man, about 3 o'clock that afternoon, I thought the rest of my life is going to be just like this. I'm going to get me a tent and some tambourines, and I'm going to hit that road, and I'm going to start saving some souls. I couldn't wait for him to get back to the club. He's 15 minutes late, and he walks through that door. I said, get your coffee and sit down. The Baptist has taken over. Well, they don't like it coming back, but he did it. And I told him what happened, and I was just waiting for him to tell me we was going to be the leader. And I was going to tell him about my tent deal. And he looked at me and grinned a little bit and said, thank God we've got that over with. Now we can get started. I said, my God, that took a year. He said, some are sicker than others. I said, what are you going to do about old what's-her-name? And he said, I'm not going to do nothing about you and old what's-her-name. I've heard all of that I want to hear. Said, my wife and I are leaving our marriage right where it is, but says, we don't use anybody here but the top number one counselor of the world, God himself. And said, I'm going to send you to a guy that's already got his work done. And he sent me to an Episcopalian, and you know they don't know. And this guy said, what do you want? I said, listen, they've had me on hold. I have not been sleeping with old what's-her-name. I've been praying for somebody too, and nobody will. And they won't let me sleep with anybody, and I've got some lined up all the time. First time in my life I've ever been where they had the sick women grouped. And I like both kinds. Whether I like the ones that got sick doing it and the ones that got sick watching the others do it. And they wouldn't let me go with them, and I was there all the time, and I'd always make sure that sweet thing, one of them was with us at ice cream, and she'd always look over to me and say, "You know, I just don't feel comfortable talking to another woman, but I feel comfortable talking to you." And I'd say, "I'll help you, baby." And I told this guy, I said, "Listen, they have not let me do it, and I have not done it, and it's been almost 2 years, and I've got brain damage. And I want to know whether I can have it with one woman, and if I can't, I'm going to go do my thing. I don't give a damn what y'all say if I have changed groups and sponsors." He said, "Do you remember when you got to Alcoholics Anonymous and you didn't fit in and you didn't fit back out there?" I said, "Yeah." "You felt like you were lonesome and you were the only person going through that period?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "If you're willing to go through that lonesome walk in every area of your life, I'll not only guarantee your relationship with one woman, I'll guarantee your relationship with your fellow man you could not have imagined, and I'll give you a bonus on top of that. I'll guarantee you a relationship with God that you could never dreamed of." I said, "I don't believe that." He said, "Isn't that fantastic?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You don't need to." I said, "Do you mean I don't have to believe?" And he said, "Not at all. It's only the action." I said, "You don't have to tell me the rest of that at all." He said, "Are you still married?" I said, "Yes, but she sleeps in her place and I sleep in mine. We meet in the living room for battle, that's all." He said, "Well, we'll just practice on her." I said, "No, we're not." He said, "Yes, we are." He said, "We're going to begin right now, and you're never going to tell her what's wrong with her ever again." I said, "Who's going to tell her?" He said, "I don't know, but you're not. And you're never going to do anything with Al-Anons, with children, with friends, to work her around to get her to do what you want her to do." I said, "Never." He said, "Never." And said, "You'll end up either having it with her or somebody else, and it won't make any difference." And he said, "And you're going to pray for her." And I said, "I'm not." "You pray for her." He said, "Yes, you are, and you're going to have to begin probably saying this many, many times a day. God, thy will be done for her as well as for me. Take our relationship, let it become what you want it to be, and show me the truth." I said, "I do not want God's will to be done for her as well as for me." He said, "Remember, what you want has nothing to do with it." So I started doing that. Had a hell of a time doing it, but I did it. And I'd taken before staff and done my fifth and already done that a couple of months ahead of that, 20th month or something. And then that old sex, love, lust thing surfaced in me. I knew what was wrong with me. Couldn't get rid of it. Told my sponsor every day, every 30 minutes, couldn't get rid of it. Told the group. One of the girls said, "You're not supposed to tell the group." So I told another group. And one of them snitched on me. "You know, we don't gossip here, we're just concerned." And my sponsor said, "Listen, I'm going to tell you something. Usually when you stop doing something, God transforms your mind, removes it from you, and you're okay. But that has not happened to you. Oh, what's your name's out of town? You go home, get in that apartment, lock that door. Don't you call a soul. And you and God get dealing with that thing." God, I went in there and said them old Baptist prayers and prayers and cried and hit the couch. I'd learned to quit hitting the bar. It hurt your hand, you know. And then about 11, 12 o'clock at night, I went to sleep. And the next morning, that thing was gone. Then I knew for the first time I was capable of having a relationship with one woman. And I knew it. I didn't tell them for 4 nights. I'd been so smart. So after the 4th night, after the meeting on the way to ice cream, I said, "Well, I guess I might as well tell you." And he said, "Oh, we knew it the first night." I said, "Why in the hell did you tell me?" He said, "You need to know that you're going to always be the last to know." I says, "Why is that?" He said, "We don't know." Well, it wasn't too long. We got a divorce. Me and old what's-her-name, and I want you to know, Al-Anons, I love you with all of my heart. If you ever need any help, call me. I want to help you. They took her to you. She found you depressing. They took her back to you. she found you more depressing. Whatever you're doing, keep doing it. We got a divorce, used the same lawyer. She just had to explain to him what kind of guy I was, so make sure he knew. And for those of you who are worried about her, 2 months after we had divorced, I saw her best friend, and she said, "So you know what's her name lately?" I said, "No." Happier than I had ever seen her. God, I wanted to call her and tell her I knew she'd forgotten who she was. My sponsor wouldn't let me. I'd been seeing this girl in the hospital, but they would not let me go with anybody. They let me work and go to AA. That's all they let me do. Think all I want to, but can't do nothing. So I've taken this, and we talked about God and work. That's all they allowed me to talk about. Anytime I'm around anybody very long, I have to mention that I want God to be ahead of all of my affairs. God, I have to do the craziest things in this damn thing. So then finally I took she and 4 other women to a hospital convention. They accused us of going together, and I had some different funny feelings with her. So when we got back, I went to the hospital. I told her, I said, I've seen her walk down the hall one time. I said, you know, maybe that's the kind of girl God's really always wanted me to have. And I told her one time, I said, you know, I think I'm falling in love with you. And I said, oh, God, I screwed up. So I just left. I didn't say any more about it. She thought a little bit about it, I think. And then when I got there, I told her, I said, I'm going to have to see you in your office. We went in to see her in her office. And I said, I think I'm falling in love with you, really. But my sponsor will not let me have an affair. And she looks at me funny, and I realize I've got to tell the rest of it. So I said, I'm an alcoholic. I go to AA every single night, twice on Saturdays and Sundays. I get to do 2 things, work and go to AA. And that's all I get to do. They don't let me do nothing else. She said, what's it all about? Well, I don't know. We smoke as fast as we can. The eyes burn. We gripe about it. And we cuss and cry and pray to God. And drink 15 cups of coffee every night and can't understand why we can't sleep. I said, I'll have to call my sponsor. And I called him. He said, what have you been doing? I said, I ain't done nothing. He said, bring her over here. I said, you'll have to go see my sponsor. So here we go. He says, sit over there, sonny. I'll handle this thing. Talked to her for 9.5 hours. I thought, hell, I believe he's going with her. And he said, well, it looks like God might be going to do something. Oh, man, that's all I want to know then. I was ready to go then. So I said, I knew what you had to do. Hell, they've had me on caution for 2 years. All you got to do is just sign Bobby's name there at the motel and go right on in. He said, no, remember what our deal was? If we don't have God, AA, and Al-Anon in that home, there'll be no home. She had a bad marriage, but she's no alcohol. She's got to decide whether she wants to be in this program or not, or there's no deal. God, brain damage set right back in again. So I had to tell her how to go to Al-Anon. I said, go in there and don't tell them a damn thing, except just tell them your name's Eloise. You're planning on marrying an alcoholic, and don't tell them another damn thing. Don't need to know nothing else. Don't tell them who it is. Nothing. They spent 3 meetings on telling her why she should not marry an alcoholic. I took her across town, and she heard a gal alcoholic talk, and she heard the program Alcoholics Anonymous. And she went back to that group and said, I want what you have. And you all converted that Southern Baptist. You have to spend a little more time with us Baptists and Catholics because we've been impregnated pretty heavy. And it takes us a little more time to get converted. But hang in there. We make good ones once you can get us there. And we have that relationship today that only God and Alcoholics Anonymous can give you. We went through step by step. I did not go to bed with her till they let me. God did put it together. We do have God, A, and Al-Anon living in our home, and our relationship is free, and I'm now capable of being in love with one woman and love other women and men, and I'm grateful to be able to do that today. And I have some dear women friends and some very dear men friends today. Some are in this room. She had 3 children. The oldest one was a Southern, the one that'll never be without work, minister. Baptist minister. Southern Baptist. Indoctrinated the Southwest Baptist Seminary in Fort Worth, which is one that's got the official stamp. There's a couple of them around here. And there you got, and they put it on there, they got it. He had a little trouble understanding how his mother lives today. But after several years, why, they finally have come around, and he had a granddaughter who stays with us 1 month every year, the last 2 years, and she did get to go to an AA conference that he will never know about. But outside of that, we're doing fine, and it's coming along. The middle boy is probably one of us. He's divorced. He had two grandchildren, the only grandson, and he's living with a mattress. And it's okay because Eloise asked him, he thought he might be drinking too much, and he said, no, he's watching it, so you know he's okay. And if we'll wait for him and pray for him, that's all we can do. The daughter had a bad deal in high school. Her boyfriend married somebody else, and she ran around with an old dirty hair, dirty beard, pot-smoking boy, and they sobered up after Al-Anon, and Eloise handled it. I thought they weren't going to make it. I could have helped them do it quicker, but they didn't. And now we just, in the last month, while the daughter separated from him, but in the meantime, she has two beautiful little granddaughters that, of course, giving us the greatest Christmases and times we've ever had. I've never had it like that. I end up having to go back to my sponsor and, my God, I got children and grandchildren. I don't know what to do with them trying to become a husband. And now I know how that's done and how I can be loving. I don't treat those girls too badly. I only give them what they want. I'll never give them any more than that. I'm not going to ruin them. I'll never give them anything that they don't want. But we have a great time. They're going to spend a lot of time with us this summer. You know, I'm so glad and so grateful that you and I are going to get to know. God, I'd have hated to have lived here and gone through all that without you and I getting to know. I'm glad I know I can stand with you tonight. And know I know some things from God himself. To know I know that the reason you and I never could be told anything by any other human being was because God had chose us, you and I, to be his special children. I don't know when he chose us, whether it was before we were born or when we were born or what. But I just know I know that you and I are God's special chosen children without a shadow of a doubt. Not only the only thing that you and I didn't know, was that God himself loved us, and you and I were cut off and did not know it. And God's children cannot live here when they're cut off. And the things that cut us off, we didn't know how to get rid of them until you and I got together. I'm glad I know that today. I'm glad I know that God really did choose you and I. And he chose us to be together. And it was designed for you and I. And I'm glad I know that you could have not turned left, neither could I, or right, and made any difference in my life up through this moment. That I know that about you and I. That you and I were designed to live the life that we're living right now up through this moment. You and I had nothing to do with it. And I'm glad I know that today. I'm glad I know that you and I were being held in God's hands all the time since we were born. There's no way for you and I to have lived up to this minute without that being true. You and I just didn't know we knew that. And I'm glad I stayed with you long enough to know that. To know I know that you and I are in the palm of God's hands and have been there all the time and didn't know it. When I spent every fiber in my body and my mind to destroy myself, God held me in his hands, and it was impossible for me to do it, just like it was for you. And I'm glad I know that today. Pretty nice to know that I had no idea where I was going. You did not know that if you didn't have a car wreck on Tuesday, you was going to be a day late to AA. You didn't know that you're spending all your time, and I was spending all my time, just preparing myself to become what Almighty God had designed you and I to be. And that's all we were doing. All that stuff, we were scrambling around, trying to have a relationship, trying to make money, trying to get educated, trying to do all this stuff, was not what we were doing. All we were doing was living the life we were supposed to do so we could get the place where we were, so God could make us into what he wanted us and designed us and chose us to be. So it's none of your business where you're going now if you didn't know where you was going when you got here. So So there's no use asking that anymore. The will of God for you and I was to be together and to live this way of life and then to let Him have the rest of it and go through the rock crusher when it's necessary to become what He wants us to be. Because He created us and He didn't make a mistake when He made you and me. And He certainly knew what He was doing because He's the Almighty God. And if His thoughts are higher than ours and His ways are higher than ours, our path's going to be unknown. But the way down that path, it's going to be different from mine, and mine's going to be different from yours. But the way that was designed for you and I was that special path that He's got designed for us that no human person and no human being knows. Just Him. So you and I are not going to know tomorrow, ever, in our lives. I'm so grateful that the only thing, I could have gone to 10 different denominations and 1,000 different churches, and my life was not to be, nor would have been, any different. The secret of my whole life was that I was a person chosen by God to live in God's kingdom. So I was not to be able to live in the world using worldly ways. The more I tried to fit in with the world, the more I tried to fit in with the worldly ways. See, I'm not supposed to do that. God's children are to live in His kingdom in this world, to be sent out to do whatever it is He is designed for us to do, and 90% of that, we'll never know what we do when He sends us out in all different places and all different ways. But see, the difference was you. The whole difference was you. It was you that I was looking for. It's you that my life was never going to be any different. Until God sent me to be with you. And see, God, you and I are right on time up through this minute. None of us are early and none of us are late. We're right on time. Fulfilling exactly what God had for you and I to do and to become. And to fulfill His purpose. And by so doing, we get the sweet stuff. You see, only God's children have the one power that wins. See, we won some battles, but we lost the game. And now we won the game. All we've got to do is lose a few battles along the path. Let those battles fall off of us and just keep walking and hold each other's hands. And then our lives are absolutely unlimited to where we're going to go. Thank God I stayed with you long enough to feel God loving me that day and to feel that power that only God's children have. And the only power that guides, directs, protects, and wins. The only power that wins over everything. And only God's children have that power. And it never fails us. When you call me, and I call you, when you and I meet together, that power never fails us. Just like it's been right here. When I can feel you loving me, and me loving you. Thank you very much.